The other day, I asked Gabriel about what type of subject he might like to hear for a sermonette, or what he thought young people might like to hear. And he brought up David and Goliath, and how he was thinking, how does one deal with the giants in their life? And I can't guarantee this is going to be all that youthful, but it got me to thinking about something, and it. So we're going to try to take his advice here and see what this comes out to. Since it could be a pretty big subject, I decided to tackle one aspect of that relationship, then try to show how that same principle of that aspect can be applied to us as Christians in this hostile world as we deal with our giants. This is not the title, but I'm going to ask the question, how did David show that he relied on God in the story of David and Goliath? And just as a quick reminder, the Philistines had come to make war with Israel, and they encamped on one mountain. And Israel responds by encamping on the other mountain, and there's a valley in between, and they're facing each other. And every morning and every evening, this giant of a man named Goliath comes out, stands before Israel, and challenges them to send out one man to fight him. And whoever lost, that nation would be the servant of the other nation. You know, seems pretty good, right? A lot less death, one person's dead, and the war's over. Of course, you're looking at a super big man, very experienced warrior, and so who's going to probably be the servant if you're thinking naturally about this? Well, let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 17 where the story is. I'm going to read some of the scriptures there, and we'll start in verse 10. 1 Samuel 17 and verse 10. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. So he's doing this, remember, twice a day, and they've been out there for like 40 days. Okay, and this is, so here he is doing it again. Verse 11, when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, David wasn't there. He was too young. He was the youngest of eight brothers, and only the oldest three were at the battle scene. So he was out there tending sheep, and he would come back and forth. He must have been old enough to want to know what's going on, and plus he was old enough to be responsible for shepherding. He was old enough to bring food to his brothers and take reports back to his dad. So he was coming back, and he was doing this, and he heard this Goliath make this challenge. And in verse 26, then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of Israel? Is that what he says? And he says the armies of the living God. His perspective was different than Goliath. Let's go down to verse 33. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. Verse 34, but David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's feet, father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing as he has defied the Lord, the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me, that's important to remember. He's just described his own killing of a lion and a bear, but did he really take the credit? The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. David did not respond to Goliath in kind. Goliath announced he defied the armies of Israel. David responded that Goliath was actually defying the armies of the living God, which means this is something owned by God. This means he was defying God. The men of Israel were afraid because they were thinking only of themselves, only of the situation, only as it appeared. They could see the huge presence of a great warrior standing against them, and they took it personally. In this situation, they were afraid. David, however, put the defiance where it belonged, which was against the living God, which makes a lion, it makes a bear, and even a mighty warrior like Goliath, sort of like something, maybe an ant under the heel of a grown man. See, David didn't take it personally. So let's move on to you and me here and now. How would you feel if, as a student, if your teacher threatened to fail you, not because your grades are poor, but because you'll be gone away for several days for the Feast of Tabernacles, and that will inconvenience them? How do you feel when everyone in class drinks the Kool-Aid called evolution? And I mainly say that in the sense that they treat a theory as a fact. And they scoff at you for believing in a creator. How does that really make you feel? How do you feel when your own relatives sneer at your belief? How do you feel when threatened with losing your job over the Sabbath or the holy days? Honestly, how does it make you feel? Naturally, this persecution should leave us fearful or sad or even angry. But we don't want to respond to these things naturally, do we? Some things to keep in mind so that we don't take it personally. Let's turn to John chapter 15. John chapter 15, we'll read verse 20. Remember the word that I said to you. This is Jesus speaking. A servant is no greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. They would persecute the greatest man who ever lived, who happened to also be God in the flesh. Why wouldn't they persecute you and me? I can almost guarantee you, every single time I've met with persecution, at least initially, and usually for the long haul, I felt alone. I might even have felt afraid. I usually get angry. It's natural to do these things, but we don't have to feel this way. And you can remember, let's remember another thing. When Jesus met Paul on the road to Damascus, Paul had been persecuting Christians. And what is it that Jesus said? Why are you persecuting the Christians? No, he says, persecuting me. Paul at the time, named Saul, was going after the armies of the Lord. And he was also going after the Lord. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. We're going to read verse 10, go from there. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, And this is again Jesus Christ speaking this, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. There's a consequence for this persecution, as it were. There's a reward, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad. That doesn't sound like lonely and afraid and angry, like often happens with me. But rejoice and be glad, not in the persecution, that's not what it's saying, not to be glad at that. For great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Throughout history, Christians have been fed to lions, beheaded, beaten, imprisoned, run out of their towns or their countries, rejected by family. They've lost their jobs and just all around been rejected. If you had been one of these, how would you have felt? If you'd experienced any of these things in your life now, how did it make you feel? In Luke chapter 23 and verse 34, Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do." One thing that Jesus, who of all people didn't need to be persecuted, who did everything perfectly, you know, we don't. We don't do things perfectly. Sometimes we bring some persecution on ourselves. He knew one thing that needed to be done, and that was to forgive. So that's something to keep in mind when you don't take it personally. They don't know what they do. Forgive them. They're not persecuting you. They're persecuting God. They, in their ignorance, are defying the armies of God. In closing, by God's grace, we can learn not to take it personally, but to use the personal experiences to draw closer to God, to grow in God's favor and the knowledge of God. Let's not take it personally. Let's forgive their defiance of the living God. Without fear, anger, or sadness, rejoice and be exceedingly glad for the promised reward of the kingdom of God. Don't take it personally.